Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. The first case this morning is Warren versus Solo Cup Company. Mr. Otto.
Good morning. May it please the court, counsel. My name is John Otto, and I represent the plaintiff, Betty Warren. The trial court in this case said it was granting summary judgment to Solo Cup on the issue of the equal pay violation, which is count two, because assuming Warren was able to establish a prima facie case, Solo Cup has established by a preponderance of the evidence that the pay differential was due to a factor other than sex, namely Lorenz's education and skill with computers. This is rather startling language in light of the litany that is usually recited in the district and appellate courts about summary judgment standards. There are a number of cases usually cited, and the district court cited them in its opinion in this case. They include, of course, Celotex, Waldridge, Addicks versus S.H. Kress, and others. The cases all say that summary judgment is not appropriate unless there is no genuine issue as to any material fact, and that all inferences and disputed issues of fact must be resolved in favor of the non-moving party. Deciding issues by preponderance of the evidence is what juries are instructed to do.
Counsel, it doesn't really matter whether the district court made a mistake of that nature because our review is de novo. So perhaps you'd like to address whether the reason that the defendant company came forward with shifts the burden back to you.
Certainly, Your Honor. The trial court, in ruling on the summary judgment motion, recited only the evidence.
Counsel, perhaps you missed the import of my question. It doesn't really matter what the trial court did because our review is de novo on a summary judgment.
Yes,
so if you
I
could
understand.
Just address what
understand.
The evidence is
okay.
In this case and what your evidence is on the prima facie case, what the defendants proffered legitimate reason was, non-sex-based reason, and then the final step in the burden-shifting formula.
On the prima facie case, there's no dispute the plaintiff is a woman and that a man was paid more doing similar work. They worked under the same job description. The plaintiff trained him, and the plaintiff had been doing the job for 3 years. Her last evaluation did not indicate any performance problems, and that was just a few months before she was terminated. And so that's the prima facie case. The defendant has raised as its affirmative defense that the reason for paying the comparator, Mr. Lorenz, more was because of his education. A jury should have been considered, and a court in reviewing the evidence in the light most favorable to the non-moving party should have considered that Lorenz's education was not related to working in a tool crib. He had a bachelor's degree, and he had two master's degrees, one in anthropology, one in education. The anthropology was the bachelor's degree. He had master's degrees in education and in urban planning, none of which have anything to do with working in a tool crib, none of which are directly related to working with computers.
I thought the evidence was that he had more computer-based training and greater familiarity and a greater comfort level with computers, whereas your client did not and, in fact, expressly admitted that she was not comfortable working with computers, and that was integral to the job.
Your Honor, the trial court recited that he had more computer-based training, but that was not the evidence. The evidence was that he had worked with computers in connection with his classes that he took in graduate school and undergraduate. However, he also testified that he had not taken any specific computer classes, and he did not have experience working with the kind of program that was used in this plant in order to keep track of parts. And the evidence further was, of course, the plaintiff had been working with those computers for 3 years. The trial court quoted the plaintiff's admission that she was kind of mediocre with computers, but did not quote the rest of that sentence in which she said that she could have, that some people like computers, some people don't, that she was kind of mediocre, that she could have improved her skills if she had been given the opportunity to work with them some more, that some of the other people in the department had gone for training to Chicago. She was never offered that training. And that there was also evidence that she had worked with computers both before and after this job. So there was evidence in the light most favorable to the plaintiff that, in fact, she also had experience with computers. And again, in the evidence most favorable to the plaintiff, that if, Mr. Lorenz, a comparator, did not have specific computer training.
Given that the company used computer expertise as the reason that Lorenz was picked for the job, why don't you discuss Ms. Weir?
We do in our brief, and I'd like to in the oral argument. Ms. Weir, by affidavit, indicated that she had specific training at a community college with computer courses and that she applied for the job repeatedly. She was in the same position as Mr. Lorenz. She was a security guard, although she had more seniority than Mr. Lorenz did. She was a full-time security guard. He was a part-time security guard. She got laid off. She repeatedly expressed interest and let the plant people who were making this decision know that she was interested, and she didn't even get an interview for the job. So if, in fact, this is not just an after-the-fact rationalization, if they were looking for somebody with computer experience, why wouldn't they have considered her job? In addition, the argument that they had to pay Mr. Lorenz more because he had more experience with computers ignores the fact that he testified he was just happy to have a job. He would have continued working at the same pay. And yet they brought him in without any experience at a higher rate of pay than Ms. Warren was getting. So, again, it seems like this business about the computer experience is simply an after-the-fact rationalization.
Now, going into something a bit different, I have a question about whether the complaint should be read to include a Title VII claim for discriminatory discharge. It's true that the prayer for relief in Count 1 seeks reinstatement as a form of relief, but paragraph 14 incorporates only the factual allegations that are relevant to unequal pay, and unequal pay is all that is referenced in that paragraph 15. As well, it almost seems as though your intent was to set forth a discharge claim in a separate count, but kind of, you know, went into the air there. How can we say that Solo should have understood that you meant to include Ms. Warren's discharge within the scope of that count one?
I suppose I should be flattered that the defendant has spent so much time exegeting what was in my mind as I was drafting the complaint. The complaint should have incorporated in count two, paragraphs 11 and 13 of count one as well. Why didn't it? I don't know. It should have. There was no grand strategy in leaving it out. The scrivener, which is me, did not say, well, let's not file a termination as part of the Title VII case. And so the plaintiff knew that termination was part of it, not only because of what was in the EEOC charge, but also because the termination was part of the facts common to all counts, as it was labeled in the first part. Ms. Warren, at her deposition, indicated that was part of her complaint. She said, if you came in off the street and you applied for a job, the same one I had, and you were a man and they let you go and they hired the man, I would say that is discriminating against me. Now, they've also picked out another part of her testimony in which because of the way the word, the question was worded, she agreed that her complaint was the difference in salary. But the bottom line is, as the Supreme Court stated in Swierkiewicz, I'm not sure I mispronounced it, but in the Supreme Court case, the plaintiff doesn't have to plead a prima facie case in a Title VII complaint, just a short and plain statement of the claim showing the pleader is entitled to relief.
Yeah, but you have to put the defendant on sufficient notice, do you not? That it, you know, that the complaint includes a claim for discriminatory discharge.
I believe the defendant was on notice, and in fact, it didn't even bring it up until after the summary judgment motion and responses had been filed. And so why didn't the plaintiff amend? It didn't occur to the plaintiff that they needed to amend. The plaintiff thought, plaintiff's counsel thought it was in there. I see my time is up for right now. I'd like to reserve the rest of the time for rebuttal unless you have
Thank you, Mr. Otto. Mr. Hirsch.
May it please the court. My name is Davy Hirsch, and I represent Solo Cup Company. The argument, and I'm going to go right to this termination argument. The complaint was a very meticulously drafted three-count complaint that explicitly excluded any reference of termination in count one. The allegations pertaining to termination were only included in count three, which was an FMLA claim. That was the only termination claim upon which the parties in the court were placed of notice in the complaint. The FMLA claim didn't need to be raised in the charge of discrimination because that isn't a filing prerequisite. So when it came time to file the complaint, as many parties do, the plaintiff refined the claims and explicitly made clear counts one and count two were alleged wage discrimination claims under Title VII and the Equal Pay Act, and any reference to discharge allegations are explicitly excluded from those. And then count three includes those discharge allegations. When the motion for summary judgment was filed and it became apparent that a claim could not be sustained under count three for termination, plaintiff rightfully consented to judgment on that claim. But in so doing, plaintiff attempted then to rewrite the complaint and try and sneak in a new theory for termination. This court in Connor and in his Wacky Groin has explicitly addressed this very precise notice argument. It's not here. Count one did not provide notice of a termination claim, and nothing has been presented to the court that can read a claim into that. Even the charge of discrimination never had a theory in that about Sandra Weir as somebody who should have gotten a tool crib position instead
of... Now, let me stop you there. Because Ms. Weir seems to have had more computer training and experience than Mr. Lorenz, yet she's passed over for the crib operator position. Since it's Mr. Lorenz's computer training and experience that Solo has offered as the justification for both hiring Mr. Lorenz and paying more than Ms. Warren, why couldn't a jury conclude that this rationale was pretextual?
Because this is a pay discrimination claim. Those were the claims before the court. Ms. Weir was never raised in the charge of discrimination.
Why does it matter that she wasn't mentioned in the complaint or in the EEOC charge, for that matter? Ms. Warren's complaint isn't based on Ms. Weir.
The
Weir's situation is evidence. It's evidence that tends to cast doubt on the reason that Solo is given for paying Warren less than they've paid Lorenz.
Ms. Weir was never a person who was raised as part of the complaint.
Doesn't matter.
Focal point at Ms. Warren's...
No, you're not getting my point. It's evidence. It doesn't matter if she was raised in the complaint. We know we're on notice pleading.
With all due respect, Ms. Warren was asked at her deposition, you are comparing yourself solely to Mr. Lorenz. on wage discrimination, and that was the basis of her claim. If it had been made clear, Sandra Weir was a security guard whose position was eliminated. There is not evidence in the record beyond a self-serving affidavit that she put in that she had the requisite computer experience. Mr. Holzhauer, in his deposition, I don't have the page right before me.
Doesn't matter if it's self-serving.
Sandra Weir
had not only taken computer classes per se, which Mr. Lorenz had not, but she had years of experience in prior jobs using computers to keep track of parts inventories.
That evidence or that allegation never had been presented to Solo Cup while Ms. Weir was employed there as a security guard. There is no evidence other than a self-serving affidavit that she put in that could not be tested because it was put in response to a summary judgment motion on a claim and an individual who was never raised as a comparator. Mr. Holzhauer's deposition does address, Mr. Otto did ask Mr. Holzhauer questions.
You see, these are jury questions. These are not summary judgment questions.
The question, however, was, in the complaint, Betty Warren claimed that in count one that she was a victim of wage discrimination on the basis of her pay compared to Don Lorenz. In count two, she claimed an Equal Pay Act violation that Mr. Lorenz was paid more than her.
Okay, I'll say it one last time. I'm belaboring the point, and I don't mean to, but I'm afraid you're not getting my point. It doesn't matter that she didn't cite or rely on Weir. That's irrelevant. What Weir's situation is simply evidence that the stated reason for paying Warren less than Lorenz is pretextual.
Your Honor, there was no evidence developed below in connection with Sandra Weir. In response to the summary judgment motion on the issues that were before the court as framed in Warren's complaint and as framed on how all the discovery proceeded, an affidavit is attached concerning Sandra Weir. Sandra Weir, there was no evidence, and I would direct the court to Mr. Holzhauer's deposition testimony, where Mr. Otto had asked him questions about Sandra Weir. Sandra Weir had inquired about a position because her knees were bothering her, and at one point, completely unrelated to Mr. Lorenz, earlier in her tenure, she had asked if there was a potential position in the parts room because she did not want to stand anymore for the security guard position.
See, that's called evidence, and that's what juries decide. But okay, we'll go on.
I think the record reflects that the case really was about Mr. Lorenz. Sandra Weir was never in the tool crib department. She never formally applied for a position. This is a comparison. Ms. Warren has made a comparison between herself and Mr. Lorenz, two people who were in the tool crib department. Mr. Lorenz clearly... And there's ample record evidence for this court.
It doesn't matter if they were in the cafeteria. It was computer expertise that Solo was looking for.
But she was never in the job. She was never in the job.
But she was a far more attractive candidate.
Your Honor, there was never an issue of Sandra Weir being in the position and being compared to Betty Warren. This case wasn't about a failure to put Sandra Weir into a tool crib position instead of someone else.
You haven't gotten my point, but go ahead. Just go ahead.
I'm trying to address the argument, but the case always was about Betty Warren and Don Lorenz. Sandra Weir never formally...
What the case is about is whether or not this woman was discriminated against because of her sex. And if they were looking for someone with computer experience, there was another woman available.
Your Honor, Don Lorenz had expressed through conversation repeatedly his interest in computers, his aptitude in computers. Sandra Weir had not made that kind of communication, when the case never involved an issue on why Sandra Weir, this is not Sandra Weir's case, and I respectfully feel we're getting sidetracked because she never was a tool crib attendant.
Only are we not sidetracked, this is the issue.
But I believe that in our summary judgment papers before the district court and in our brief, I addressed the reasons why Sandra Weir is not relevant. The comparisons in the case, the Equal Pay Act and Title VII, talk about, in a wage discrimination claim, comparing the two people who are making the claim. We asked Betty Warren. Sandra Weir was never someone that had raised a claim, that had brought to Solo Cup's attention that she felt she should have been put into the tool crib position. At no time there did she ever suggest she should have been brought into the position. Betty Warren in her charge never raised Sandra Weir as a comparison. In her complaint, she never raised Sandra Weir as a comparison. She cannot make a prima facie case with Sandra Weir under Title VII. She cannot show the issue. Sandra Weir was never in the tool crib position. She will be unable to show that she and Sandra Weir were similarly situated. It was Don Lorenz, and she cannot show they were similarly situated because there is undisputed record evidence.
You seem to have the idea that you have to be in exactly the same position to be similarly situated. That is, you know, certainly not the case. Look at the pool.
Talks about being substantially similar in all material respects. Sandra Weir never held the position, nor was there ever a claim in the case that Don Lorenz wasn't qualified for the position, that Don Lorenz didn't deserve the position. There's never been a claim like that in this case, in the charge, or in the complaint. It's undisputed Don Lorenz was qualified for the position. So, and the record supports that Betty Warren acknowledges Lorenz had computers. She knew parts, page 298 of the long appendix. Her prior experience only was looking up parts. She acknowledged she had no experience inputting parts, long appendix, page 60. She testifies there was significant increase in computer work after the MP2 computer inventory system was programmed. When she started in a job, it was hand inventories. Therefore, there is no question of material fact that Don Lorenz, who testified he took, there were computer components in the courses he took. He was skilled in computers, interested in computers. Betty Warren says she's mediocre. Sandra Weir, for purposes of this case, really never becomes a comparison because under Title VII, Betty Warren cannot make out her prima facie case. And under the Equal Pay Act, it's clear she's comparing herself to Lorenz, and for all the reasons I just articulated and the evidence in the record, the decision should be upheld because there is no question of material fact. I understand in a different case, if Sandra Weir had been raised, had been brought up, if it was a case about Don Lorenz was not qualified for the position or there was a better qualified candidate and Sandra Weir was a better qualified candidate, but Solo Cup picked Mr. Lorenz over her, then I understand where Your Honor is going with the argument. But there is no such claim here. There never has been such a claim, and Betty Warren has never contested that Don Lorenz was qualified for the position.
Okay. We're told Ed Holzhauer, plant manager and responsible for the tool crib, and Tony Payton, in charge of human resources, that she was interested in the job. She told them about her prior training in computers and use of computers to track parts inventories. Holzhauer told Weir that he would let her know if an opening in the tool crib opened up.
Your Honor, I come back to the point. For Betty Warren's prima facie case, She has to show that she was similarly situated to the man who was making more money. There never had been a claim urged in the case. While Ms. Warren may want to try and talk about Sandra Weir, there was never a claim in the case that Don Lorenz should not have been put in the tool crib position and Ms. Weir should have been put in there instead. There was never a claim in the case that some discriminatory practice of placement in the tool crib position occurred. That is why the discussion about Sandra Weir was disregarded by the district court and should be disregarded here, because that was never an issue in the case before this court.
Of course, the district court assessed the weight of the evidence on summary judgment when the sole issue is whether a question of fact is presented, and in that the judge erred.
But it needs to be a question of material fact, and the standard is an abuse of discretion. Did the district court abuse its discretion? Was it arbitrary for the court not to consider the affidavit of Sandra Weir using the Mueser decision by way of example? It was not arbitrary or an abuse of discretion for the court not to consider Sandra Weir's affidavit, because that issue, the issue of who should have been placed into a tool crib position, was never before the court. In quick summary, I see I'm out of time. This case, as the district court correctly found and this court should find here, is a wage discrimination case under Title VII and under the Equal Pay Act. The plaintiff herself compared herself only to Don Lorenz. There was never any issue before the court below or the court here about Mr. Lorenz's competence or capabilities to be in the tool crib position. So the reference to Sandra Weir really doesn't come before the court and does not create an issue of material fact, because that issue is not before the court. Mr. Lorenz had the education and the computer capabilities, which provided a reason other than gender to justify the difference in pay, and the decision should be affirmed. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Hirsch. Mr. Arno, you have 4 minutes, Mr. Arno.
First of all, I want to rebut any statement that the review here is an abuse of discretion standard. As Judge Sykes indicated, this is de novo. There was no ruling by the trial court rejecting Sandra Weir's affidavit. There was the trial court did not say, for some reason, this is improper. The trial court just didn't discuss the affidavit or consider the evidence. I don't want to belabor the point, other than that's what lawyers tend to do, I guess. But the defendant's argument...
Judges do, too.
The defendant's argument that the court can only consider evidence from sources who are directly comparators themselves is absurd. Ms. Weir's testimony is offered to cast doubt on the company's affirmative defense, and that testimony can come from any source. Doesn't have to be by someone that has themselves filed a charge of discrimination. Why Ms. Weir didn't file a charge of discrimination, we don't know. The argument by the defendant that Mr. Lorenz had more experience than Betty Warren is just not correct. Betty Warren was in the job for 3 years. She was doing the job when he came. The day he walked in the door, he was paid more than Betty Warren, and he had zero experience doing what she was doing. And finally, with respect to count one, there is no theory that's explicitly excluded. Explicit, as I understand the term, means you say, I'm not including termination. That's not stated in count one. In fact, the count is entitled Cause of Action under 42 U.S.C. Section 2000E, Sex Discrimination. So thank you very much, unless you have further questions.
Thank you, Mr. Otto. Thanks to both counsel. The case will be taken under advisement, and we move.